When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
You may remember a few weeks ago, we were very kindly sponsored by Coin Corner, who make the world of buying and selling Bitcoin easier than ever. However, as I introduced Coin Corner and tried to explain a little bit about Bitcoin, I said that Elon Musk would even let you buy a Tesla using Bitcoin. Then a few hours before that episode went live, Elon Musk came out and said, you can no longer buy a Tesla using Bitcoin, and I looked a bit silly. Luckily, Coin Corner are pretty lighthearted about these things, and they realize they can't control the price of Bitcoin before any sponsorship goes live, and they very kindly offered to sponsor a number of future episodes of this podcast, so we're very grateful to have them on board. If all this chat about Bitcoin's got you intrigued, if you noticed the comment section of that episode going crazy with people talking about the pros and the cons of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, head over to coincorner.com/STG. Well, not only can you sign up and start trading Bitcoin, but you can also find out a lot more. There's some amazing information on there, so you can read up about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies and decide if you want to get involved. If you do, as I say, coincorner.com/STG, or use my code STG when you sign up, and that way you'll get some sats, which are basically very small units of a Bitcoin. I got into the Bitcoin game late. I couldn't afford to buy a whole Bitcoin, so I own sats, just small units, and that's what you'll get for free when you sign up using that code STG or my link coincorner.com/STG. So yes, thanks to them for ignoring my slight mess up a few weeks ago and willing to come back and sponsor future episodes. Hello one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass. I'm your host, Sam, from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
And I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
Yes, you are. Each week we get together, we talk about cars, motorsport, F1, cars. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can watch us on youtube.com/behindtheglass. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on notifications. And Tony, if people want to support this podcast, what should they do?
Watch it.
No. But also head to Patreon. You can support us on patreon.com/behindtheglass. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode. It is so hot today. If any of you are watching this on the YouTube channel in HD, I apologize, because in about 10 minutes, I think we're both going to look, we just stepped out of a shower.
It is really warm.
32 degrees, I think, in London today. In here, it's about 58.
Well, yeah, because we've got loads of lights.
We got lights on, heat travels upwards. I mean, it's a bit of a sauna in here. I've opened as many windows as I can. That's all I'm saying. I'm just warning people.
It must be
cooler
downstairs, though.
It's so much cooler downstairs, but those mold mushrooms.
Oh, the mushrooms.
Yeah, the mold mushrooms. Which, you know, I don't know how much I should be talking about those, but there are some mold mushrooms in the downstairs section of STGHQ at the moment. I don't think it's safe to be around them. So until they're gone, we have to be up here in the sauna. But that's what we're gonna power through. Like the Formula One drivers at the British Grand Prix on Sunday.
I know you've done a full podcast, but I thought we'd talk about it a little bit. I knew that was coming.
I'll help promote the F1 series that I do here on Behind the Glass. So after the checkered flag, this year, after each Formula One Grand Prix, Paul Wallace and I sit down and chat through the race weekend. And this is one of our favourite races to review, and I think one of our most popular episodes so far on the F1 series. So, I mean, it's gone live.
Yeah, it's already gone out.
At time of us recording this, it's already gone out and it's flying already.
Good.
So it was a controversial weekend and good to see. Should we talk about it? I'd like to touch on it. Yes. So I'll just ask, I'm not going to say anything because I've spoken for an hour about it already. Tell me your thoughts on the Hamilton Verstappen crash quite quickly.
I thought it was a racing incident. When we spoke, we was all messaging and you said, which you probably already repeated, you thought he would get a penalty. I probably thought it was a little bit harsh. There was a gap. He was alongside him. However, I do get the point that, you know, he probably weren't heading towards the apex. He was understeering into the car. He obviously never intentionally went to have him off. I think he thought there was going to be wheel-to-wheel contact and he was going to push him out the way a bit, like, you know, that's happened before, as in Verstappen's done that to Lewis a few times, obviously not at that speed, but he has still done it. I think it's a racing incident. Mate, let them race. They're racing. I mean, flipping hell.
It's Formula One.
It's Formula One, the pinnacle of racing. And they're arguing about... You know what makes me laugh is that 100% roles reversed, Verstappen would have done exactly the same thing. He'd have fired it up the inside, no problem.
Agreed.
Yeah.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, basically, if you want to hear more about this, then head over and check out the After the Checkered Flag series and our latest episode from the British Grand Prix. I think it's titled British Grand Prix Reaction. And you can hear a whole hour-long episode where Paul and I deep dive in to all the things that happened during that race weekend. Anyway, we've got a few new patrons to welcome. Actually, we've got a whole load of new patrons that have been joining up. Yeah, over the last couple of months, we've kind of missed out shouting them out. So I'm just gonna go crazy now. D. Neil, I'm going to go... Let's suggest...
Where are these people from?
Dave Neil, I'm just going to suggest.
All right.
All over the world, mate. As we know, our patrons are from all over the world. I couldn't tell you exactly where D. Neil is from.
Right.
I'm going to assume it's called David, but maybe you're not. Sorry. Nicholas, Harry Stone, Zane Mahmood, Hugh Lloyd, Joe Kendrick, Boston Taylor, Mike, Emil Soddy, Emil Soddy, sorry, from Canada. Oliver Butlin, G-Man's Bikes and Bits. Are you promoting your own business there, Grant? I think you might be. Brandon Wellington, James Watson. I mean, the list keeps going. All these are heroes. David Allison Calvert, Stuart Roberts, Matthew Lang, Sid Merrock, Connor Square. I mean...
How many have we got now?
How many patrons? I think 250 or something like
Beautiful.
That. Beautiful. Unbelievable. The best people in the world. Yeah, but we do love the rest of you as well.
Of course.
I mean, we love all of our listeners, but our patrons do make us feel quite special, don't they?
They do, yeah.
I need to get back to some of your messages. Apologies. Stay tight. I've been a bit frantic and I've been a bit slow on the replies. But anyway, just wanted to shout you guys out because you're awesome. Now, I have to unfortunately kickstart the car chat this week. With not a confession or an admission or what's it called when you sort of wave the white flag? Or basically, I'm going to admit that you were right about something. And I just, it pains me so much to say.
Some time to time. I mean, I can't get everything wrong.
No. But we do tend to disagree on quite a bit. And there was one thing recently which I really disagree with you on, but I now have to agree with you on, and it is about manual gearboxes and whether... they might be a little bit obsolete these days, that now automatics is so good and cars are so powerful. Maybe PDKs, or sorry, I've just given away a bit of my story. Maybe automatic gearboxes are the better route to go. Well, I've just got out of a PDK GT4.
Oh, I mean, that will be good.
Oh, it was so good.
Really?
Oh my God. Okay, so a few things to address here. Obviously, most people now know I decided to sell my 911. We talked about it last week. And whenever,
How's it doing?
Well, it's going to be, as of today, I think it's at like 27 and a half grand, something like that.
But how many days left?
I think it ends on Thursday. So by the time this episode's out, I think it's ended.
Oh.
I don't know. It's all a bit, hey, you know, as long as someone buys it and enjoys it, that's all that I care about. But what was I going to say? I've said it before, whenever I sell a Porsche, I immediately want another Porsche.
Of course, yeah.
So I got this GT4 and I was like, ugh, am I making a mistake? Should I just keep hold of the 911? Mm. And then I went, well, it's not a GT4, is it? So yes, I think going into this experience, I wasn't that excited because you know my frustrations with the Boxster Spider, 718 Spider.
Yep.
I found the engine a bit dirty because of that long gearing, just a bit uncharacterful and... I don't know, it was very good, but didn't excite me. The PDK gearbox, I mean, just brings that car to life.
It just changes it, yeah, because of the gear ratios.
Well, okay, so the gear ratios make a difference. Obviously, you've got 7 gears instead of 6, and they're slightly shorter in the first few gears. So let's say with the manual, second gear gets you up to 84 miles an hour. Yeah. I think in the PDK, it's 73 or so. So it's not hugely different.
No, but that'll make a difference, mate.
Yeah. As does, believe it or not, the 10 newton meters of torque. Because that PDK gearbox is so clever, the car is always a lot more alert. It's always a lot more on it and ready and raring to go. Whilst, obviously, the manual is fantastic because you're involved in the experience and you're shifting and all these things. Oh, someone's calling me. Oh, hello.
What's happened?
My phone's ringing out loud on my laptop.
How's that happened?
Can I check that? Because I'm trying to sell my house and I just want to make sure that's not the estate agent. Meanwhile, tell everyone why you would assume a PDK GT4 is going to be better.
Well, mate, it's going to be better because, one, because of the gear ratio, of course. Like I said, I think it's just a bit too fast to in a manual to manage the power. It's a bit like what I was saying the other day about the M2 comp manual and the DCT car. I just think it's that little bit too fast to you know, like I said, I know you can control it and you can, because when you're in a manual car, you can control your speed. You're not going as fast, but these manufacturers are making cars faster and faster and faster. Then don't make them faster, make them slow, and everyone have a manual gearbox.
But so this is the thing for me. It wasn't that the car is too fast for a manual gearbox. It's the fact that with that engine, which in my opinion only comes to life in the final 500, dare I say, 1,000 RPM, where in a sense you've got to really rev that engine out to make it sort of come alive and to really perform. And with the manual gearbox, that's an effort because the gears are so long and you're sort of constantly chasing that final rev range. You know, you're always shifting down and you need to keep it sort of, or just leave it in gear, at which point you can do the whole of the UK in second gear a little bit dull.
Yeah.
With the PDK, firstly, you can sort of obviously switch between the gears quicker. You've got a teeny bit more torque, so there's a little bit more urgency anyway, and shorter gear ratios. So whether you're completely in manual control with the flappy paddles or using the shifter, or you just leave it to do its own thing, the car's just always just a little bit more ready, a little bit more urgent. The engine feels a bit more responsive. I just thought it brought the car to life.
So if I'm ever driving a PDK car, I always drive in manual with them. I don't drive them in automatic because I still think they're a little bit lazy and there's a bit of hesitant, unless I'm in town. So if I'm in town in central London, I was out in the Turbo S at the weekend and I was in town and you just leave it in automatic, that's fine. You're pooling around. And if I was in town in a PDK GT4, it's exactly, just leave it in auto and comfort. Like we've said about these modern cars now, there's so many different modes to drive it. If you drive a manual car, there's only one real mode, manual. Whereas if you drive an automatic, you know, like these clever gearboxes, one of our two favourite cars, the M5 Competition, it's four cars in one.
52 settings.
Yeah,
you know?
they do so many. And that partly is because of how good the gearbox is and how well it suits the engine. And I just think now these modern cars and these modern engines, they just suit an automatic or a double clutch gearbox, personally.
Well, yes. You know, so as I say, I fought you a little bit on this when we talked about it at the last Behind the Glass Live event. But I do concede, at least for that GT4, I actually will come out and say that I think it suits the car better and there'll be a lot of purists. And I shocked myself going into that. I thought that would never be the case. It's the kind of car that I would always want a manual. Weirdly, if I had the Spider, I think I would still go manual, even though I didn't really gel with it. But that GT4 with PDK, and let's face it, Porsche say the fastest way to go around a track these days is with PDK. That's why the 3RS, the 2RS is equipped with them. And so if you're taking a GT4, that's a track car, really, isn't it? I mean, I know it's used on the road a lot too.
But yeah, you're right. As in, you know, there's so many different things you can do with an automatic gearbox that you can't do. You've got to get all your gearing done before a corner on a manual car. With a PDK, you can do it as you're going in and you can use the gears as you're going out as well. You can't really do that with a manual.
It's easier to chase that torque, to chase that sweet spot of that particular engine in that car.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, I'm not going to bow down to you, but I will concede.
I would say that the M2 comp is the same. As in, I'm not saying it's a bad car in a manual or an automatic, and it is personal preference, and it's my personal preference. Because overall, I just think they're a better machine. They're a better tool for being an automatic or a PDK. They've got one extra gear. They use most of the power of the engine all the way through the ranges. Being, you know, they just, you know, execute all the power. And I don't think you do that in a manual.
Fair enough. Well, a new car's launched today, which is definitely not going to be available in manual. And we can talk about that. The new RS3.
The new RS3.
It launched today. Did you see? Because it literally launched on your, as you were on your way here, it launched.
Yeah.
So do you know anything about it?
It's a few quid, that car.
It's definitely going to be a few quid. A quid. I know nothing about it. I've literally opened the article because it launched. I was busy while dropping that
GT4. Bits.
You know bits? Oh, go on then. Reel stuff off. I'll fact check you with the article. Yeah, go on.
So 51 or 52,000 quid start. So that's 60,000 quidish, basically. Okay.
It's, by the time you put any options
by
on.
By the time you put it, yeah. It's got an active drift mode like the Golf R and the A45S. So it's quite clever. I'm not going to go into it too much, but these drift modes in these new modern cars, they still have a Haldex unit at the front.
Right.
But what they do is they have two clutches on the back axle. So it's all, so the torque gets thrown to, if you're turning right, this is right.
I was going to say, that was worrying for a second.
Then yeah. The torque will get thrown to the left wheel, which is why it gives you the
slip.
The slip, essentially. Okay. But it's not like an open diff car, like an M2 or a Porsche, where you know, both wheels can actively spin. I think that drift mode on them cars is a little bit dangerous. It's all right if you're going round and round and round and doing donuts in a car park. But I think if you're trying to drift round a corner, I think it'll probably be very snappy and will snap back at you. So I think you should have a proper
rear-wheel drive car. Yeah. Because I think it's that weirdly synthetic feeling. It basically all started with the Focus RS.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
And the first time I had a go in that, I was always like, oh, it's a bit weird. You know, it's not a sort of traditional, you say, rear-wheel drive car or how you would slide a car normally. It sort of, it feels a bit forced or a little bit electric and...
Well, it is forced.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And so you're right. That was on a sort of closed circuit event. So out on the roads, you know what? It's obviously something that people can master. It probably takes a little bit of time to get used to. Mm. But I wonder if the technique on the road, not that it's always should be encouraged, closed road, let's say, the doing a drift mode car, the technique is the same as doing a proper rear wheel drive.
Yeah, because it goes against what the car's trying to do, because you've got the front axle trying to pull you straight. And the rear axle trying to let loose. So it's probably very similar. I've never tried, but it's probably very similar to drifting an electric car.
Maybe,
because they're four-wheel drive. And I have lots of experience of drifting four-wheel drive cars because I've done lots of skidding and lots of donuts in my purple manual and done a set of tyres on an airfield. But whenever I used to get that car, and that had a different split as well, as in it had 70-30 split, so you could get the back out. But the car would always want to straighten itself back up. And these cars, I think, will be no different.
Yeah, I'm sure. It'll be interesting to see. But yeah, you're right. It's got full drift mode. It's saying 395 horsepower.
So same horsepower-ish to the old car. Little bit more torque. I think it's still a 7-speed double clutch gearbox.
Yeah.
The inside looks a little bit like a new S3, couple of little bits and pieces RS stuff. The seats are nice. You can have the inside of the seats the same colour as the body if you like. There's a few nice, you know, like M cars have the stitching on the seat.
Yeah, they've done a few things to make it sort of stand out.
Yeah, you can have that on the RS car now. The wheels are lovely. It sits a lot lower than the current S3.
It looks aggressive, I have to say, from the photos. You can get carbon ceramics.
You can. You could get that on the old car.
Could you? Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I find that fairly outrageous on an RS3.
And you can option Trofeo R's.
Yes, I've
just
seen that. Semi-slick tyres. I mean, it's getting to the levels now where this, I mean, it's not even a super hatch. This is a sports car now. I mean, this is borderline a sports car. I mean, with all the sort of tech that they're talking about. And then weirdly, they've made a big deal about the noise. Audi also highlights the incomparable sound provided by the motor's unique 1-2-4-5-3 cylinder firing order with a new noise control flap in the exhaust, opening at different points. I mean, with all the regulations we know about, I find it quite surprising that they're banging on about noise.
So what they might have done there is they might have, by getting away with the emissions or getting around the emissions, what the old RS and S cars used to do pre-19 is when you change gear, they'd make this
fart.
Yeah. Well, and then from 19 to now, that's been dialed out and they just change. It's simultaneous because them automatic gearboxes, as we spoke about, are very good. But maybe what they've done is they've changed the mapping of how the cylinders go up and down to get it to fart again. I'll be interested to see if that's what they've done.
Yeah, with a new noise control flap in the exhaust opening at different points in the rev range.
Yeah.
Depending on the sector of driver mode and an an enhanced engine note as well with the RS Sports exhaust.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're definitely going to have played around with it because there's not a lot they can do. They can't put a really shout exhaust on it anymore, as we know, because of the various filters. But you're right, maybe they've done some cleverness just to bring out a bit of... Aston did it with the Vantage. When they were doing the Vantage, yeah. And you get that real... You know, the big fart noise as you shift gear.
And you know what? Very interesting that Audi haven't gone down the same trap as a lot of these manufacturers where they've really enhanced the power. What they've done is they've just reworked the car, got a bit more torque out of it, because it is faster than the old car. It won't be loads faster, but it is faster. More importantly, it's 0.1 of a second faster to 60 than an A45S, so it's basically the same. But what they haven't done, they haven't fallen into that trap of, giving it another 40 or 50 horsepower to sell it, because they will sell them cars, mate. Absolutely no problem at all. Even though they're 60,000 quid, there will be people in their droves.
Well, and this is your area of the market, which is definitely why I'm letting you talk, because you know way more about this car than even this article that I'm reading suggests.
Yeah,
you're right, 20 pound foot torque more than the old car. Yeah. And yes, just faster than the A45S. And you're right, it's the kind of car that people will just go out and buy. We've seen Golf R, we think, insanely expensive, but people are buying by the bucket load. I'm starting to see them everywhere. And I think this looks really good, this car, the RS3. Of all the sort of super hatches over the A45, over a M140i or an M, I mean, M2 is a different world. But, you know, actually, to be fair, there is the RS3 saloon, isn't there? So I don't know what that goes up against. But it's the one that I would go for, essentially. Mm. My question would be is will it now, like so many of these German cars, sort of be so good and synthesized, which maybe the old generation was as well, that... Well, I don't know. I was going to go down the same old story of, it's going to lose a bit of its character and persona, but it's not really what they're about, is it? They're sort of just, machines.
You know what? We've said this before, and I was literally having a conversation with someone on the phone this morning about the Turbo S and how good it is. It modern cars now are just so good, but because they've so good, they've kind of lost a bit of character. And the gentleman I was talking to has got an AMG GTR.
Okay.
Which is... Although it's a modern car, it has still got a bit of character. It's got that big bonnet. And we've said how much we like them before. The Turbo S doesn't have character, and that's probably the same. It's four-wheel drive. It's just going to be bloody fast and just a nice place to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to get across when I was speaking to this guy about the Turbo S. That's the hot hatch version of that, basically.
So the question is, with all of this performance and ability and sort of relative comfort and tech... But at 60 grand, what else are you going to be looking at? Because I think that that's kind of a sports car now. It's not even really a hot hatch. I mean, and in the saloon form, it's a proper bit of kit. And at that point, what could you be doing? You could be getting Supras. You could be getting... What else is there in terms of an affordable sports car? You get a Cayman? You get a Cayman, couldn't you? 60 grand?
Get a Boggo Cayman. Yeah,
Boggo Cayman.
It's not... In the real world, it won't be as fast as that car. And it's definitely not as practical... And you have to remember that sports cars now, they're not like if you take a new shape M3 or the RS5 or the RS4, they're not 60,000 quid anymore.
No,
they're
80,000 everything has gone up, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're
so,
right.
So,
actually, it sits where it's supposed to sit. It's just the fact that everything's got more expensive.
Yeah.
But you say, you know, it's not going to be, the performance is going to be the same. Hey, that new RS3, I put it on an English B road with a F8 Tributo. I think the F8 would struggle to keep up with it.
Oh, mate.
In the sense where, you know, you talk about other supercars, sorry, sports cars, things like that. That car will be as quick as anything on an English country
apart
road.
Apart from a Turbo S.
Yeah, okay, fine. Maybe.
But, mate, honestly, you're right. You get in any supercar, if you get someone that can drive the RS3, you won't catch him. No chance.
It's insane, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Not the only car that's launched recently. Got a couple of others. The first one I want to talk about is one that I think is really good looking. Have you seen this? Hyundai Kona N.
Yes, I saw it.
What a cool little looking car. It's like a little baby SUV type thing. It's got limited slip diff, 35 grand, well priced. I guess this is what, sort of based on the i30M, but in little baby SUV form? Is that the kind of vibe?
Yeah, so that I would say that is the Cupra...
The Formentor?
The Formentor competitor.
Okay, so yeah, it's saying placing it squarely between a Puma ST and a T-Roc. So maybe a little tiny bit smaller.
Okay, fair enough,
Than the Formentor. Yeah.
Maybe the Ateca?
Yeah, the Kona N has more in common with the i30N than the hot new i20N. It's got the turbocharged four-cylinder. One second, I'm literally reading it as we go. Classically well prepared for one of these podcasts.
300
yeah, horsepower. 276 horsepower, yeah. 300 odd pound foot of torque. I think it just looks good. And we spoke about this, actually. It's a good point you bring up, the Cupra Formentor, that it's good that there's this kind of choice now. Like, that's what I like, is that, you know, in that market, there's loads of options, and this thing looks different and alternative, and it's kind of cool. And we know how sort of well that N brand is doing for Hyundai. I think the i20N looks super cool.
Well, the only thing about that thing there,
yeah,
is that I bet its rivals are probably four wheel drive, and judging by power, it's similar to the i30. I bet that's a two wheel drive car.
Let me see if I can find it here.
It might have a diff.
So yeah, front axle. Well done. 8-speed dual clutch automatic gearbox.
Yeah, have a diff. Have a front diff.
Interesting.
So that will drive a bit different. As
well. Yeah.
You know, that's because obviously the bloke that works at Hyundai that designs these cars now, he used to work for BMW M.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
He was the M man. So he's gone over to Hyundai now. So, which is why they've gone down that sports car kind of route.
Yeah. I think it's cool. I think they've got, it's nice they've got that division. You know, we've seen it with Toyota and the GR brand, now Hyundai with the N brand. So, as I say, I'm just, I think it looks good. I just wanted to talk about it because I think it looks nice. Don't know much else about it. And speaking of things that look nice, I know you're not going to be a big fan. Can we talk about the van?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hala.
We can.
The Aston Martin Valhalla, which, you know, again, like we've spoken quite about the Valkyrie and about all these things, you know, originally launched in Geneva, what, 2018 or something like that? When did the Valhalla first sort of get, you know, announced?
We was there, remember?
Yeah, of course, when everything got pulled, covers got pulled back. But now we know full production details. It's going to be for 2023. We've got a hybrid V8, 937 horsepower. And it's sort of... It doesn't really look like a baby Valkyrie anymore, does it? It looks like a more significant, like it looks like a car, looks like a proper car.
You know what I thought it looked like? Because I was messaging the group and saying, what they're doing with the Valkyrie, and then I misread things because I do that sometimes. Okay. I'll go through something and think, oh no, what's happened?
The Valkyrie's a VA hybrid, what?
Yeah, I don't read things properly, and then when I read back and read it, I realised it was a completely different car. I remembered that it got unveiled at Geneva.
Easy mistake to make, don't worry.
Yeah, so originally I did think, is it look a Valkyrie? And I thought, no. You know what it looks like? It looks like a little Koenigsegg. Like a baby Koenigsegg.
You're not wrong. It's like a little bit, it's got a lot of sort of design inspiration. I think there's bits of Koenigsegg, there's almost bits of sort of Huayra, there's sort of bits of Valkyrie, bits of Maserati MC20. I think it looks a lot like the Project One, the Merc. I think it looks a lot like the Project One,
especially from the front.
You know, it's got lots of, sort of different design cues. I mean, I think cool, and hey, everyone knows I'm an Aston Martin fan, and I want to see these kind of cool, crazy projects coming from Aston Martin. This, pricing wise, did they talk about pricing?
$600,000.
Thank you so much. Is
I don't
a lot
know if that's it, plus options.
Is a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, again, you look at the SF90 and go, Ferrari just.
Well, it puts it in that firing line, doesn't it? As in, it's similar horsepower, similar setup in terms of hybrid. They're saying that car's got a lot more downforce than the SF90.
They are.
Similar in weight as well. The difference in brand value between Ferrari and Aston Martin is huge. You know, Ferrari up here and Aston down here in terms of brand value, and they're trying to charge at least 200 grand more.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, that's the question, which, you know, you could say... I'm just trying to think DBS versus 812. Where are we at with that?
Well,
similar on
new cars. No, DBS was cheaper.
Cheaper, okay.
And as used cars, they're still cheaper.
Fine. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's a big punchy move. And this is all part of Aston Martin trying to rebrand themselves, re-identify themselves. They've got the F1 team and all these different things and pushing towards Valkyrie coming out. We're hopefully going to see a new Vanquish at some point, which is going to be sort of an even babier version of this Valhalla. I think it's great, but you're right. That's a ton of money.
Mm.
But Aston Martin need a ton of money. And, you know, it's not easy for them to develop these kind of cars willy-nilly and then just sell them off for 350 grand.
Yeah.
They're going to have to charge a ton.
Yeah, and as well, I know that it's going to be production car, right? It's going to be a series production car. I'd be interested to know, one, how many deposits they get and how much they require from people, because what Aston have done in recent years with these big stuff, and not just Aston, there's, you know, McLaren do it, Mercedes done it with that Project One. They take a hell of a lot of money off someone, then say, well, hold on a minute, you just got to wait a couple of 3 years.
Mm-hmm. 2023, this isn't turning up until...
At least 2023.
Do we think...
Is it going to be another Valkyrie?
The deposits are going to help finish the Valkyrie.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that's what they do. They round up across the world. They, you know, because it's free money for them.
Of course.
It's an injection of money, and they must use that for development. They must do.
And this doesn't have to turn up for another 5 or 6 years based on the Valkyrie program.
That's right.
You know, if I was a Valkyrie customer right now, I think I'd see this and be like, oh, I give up on this Valkyrie thing. Give me one of these. But then I'd be like, oh, hold on a sec, actually, though. Because what if I get caught up in the same sort of semi-scam, you know? It's all very exciting, all the ideas. And hey, look, it's a big scale back from their original plans to have their own. I think they were going to do their own V6, weren't they? That was the whole plan.
Yeah.
And now it's a version of that Mercedes. Again, I guess, I think it's what's in the mixture of what's in the GT Black Series with a bit of hybrid tech, isn't it?
Yeah, so it's a flatline V8 car, which is why that Black Series doesn't sound that well. It sounds a little bit like an M5 because they're flatline V8. It's not a burbling V8. It's not like an old C63 engine where it's not flatline. So that's what they're putting in that Valhalla.
Yeah, exactly. And with the hybrid tech to make it the sort of beast that it is. I want it to exist. I want it to be a thing. I want to be excited. Mm. I want to see it out on the road and all of these different things. I'm a bit nervous with Aston Martin that they're going to, because they talked about there's going to be like 10 more cars before, I don't know what date it was, but
yeah,
you know, they're saying they're going to be churning out all these different models. And I don't remember that Lotus era when, what was his name? It came out and they released all those cars. They released like 9 new cars at Geneva.
Yeah.
And none of them ever got built.
Yeah.
And I don't want that with Aston, where there's going to be constantly revealing all these amazing sort of concepts, all these ideas, and we're all going, great. And then they just never turn up.
There was a car underneath that, wasn't there? Was a baby one.
The Vanquish.
That
was the thing. It was the 3 cars all unveiled basically at the same time at Geneva. You had the Valkyrie in some kind of supposedly production form back then. You had the Valhalla and you had the Vanquish.
Mm.
And the Vanquish has just gone very quiet. We've never heard anything about that. And then suddenly 2 years later, you get a production version of Valhalla, which is completely different to the car that was unveiled.
Well, that's the car they should be making, mate. The Vanquish. Little Vanquish.
Because 220 grand.
Whatever.
Because
it's a lot easier to get 250 off someone than it is to get 600.
But I think they're all funneled down from the top, if you know what I mean.
Fair.
Like, they needed that Valkyrie funding to then funnel. It's
of
a
course.
Bit like with Lotus and the Avaya. They needed that big splash moment to announce, hey, we're here, we're back, we're doing things. Even they know that that car was super niche and only a very few customers were ever going to potentially buy it and it was a new technology. That then made Emira, I think, more exciting because they've already been... And I think that's Aston's kind of thing. Let's go from the top down. But you're right, I would say... Give us Vanquish.
Yeah.
Let's actually buy them. Let's actually put them on the road.
Yeah.
And then build up from there.
Yeah.
Let's wait and see. But anyway, did you see, by the way, just going back to the British Grand Prix and talking about Aston Martin, Sebastian Vettel after the race?
What was he doing?
Clearing up rubbish in the stands.
Oh, fair play.
He went and worked with all the Silverstone volunteers or workers and it was clearing up all the plastic and rubbish. Absolute hero.
Very good.
Absolute hero.
I saw him running around on his pedal bike, overtaking everyone. But
He's becoming a great human being. He's becoming a great human being.
No, I think he's always been a good human being, mate. As in, it's why he's one of my favourite drivers. And I used to, you know, he's not competitive anymore, obviously. But I really, I've never met him, obviously, but he really comes across well as a person. He's not interested in social media. Mm-hmm. He's a very family orientated man, and I think people should look at him, and I'm sure he's a role model for many people. But he comes across as a real top.
And the way he's starting to give back
You've
to
met
the world
him as well, right?
Yeah, a handful of times. Always so nice, so interested by everything. So yeah, just genuine and down to earth. Yeah. You know, I always got on with him very well. So yeah, it was just nice to see. But anyway, we just spoke about that. Flat plane cranked V8 over in the Valhalla. Let's talk about V8s for a second, because the lovely Autocar, thank you Autocar for helping giving us topics to talk about, compiled a list recently which was the greatest V8 engine cars ever made.
Oh.
And I thought, you know, let's scroll through that. We're fans of V8s.
We are.
And coming off the back
of one of my favourite engines.
I think it is my favourite engine. I think I can't say it. But as we know, we've long talked about the fact that V12s might not be around for that much longer. V8s are also slightly declining, with Merc moving away from them. And there's a fly. Sorry, a fly landed on my finger just then and I had a little panic attack. Anyway, so yeah, let's see what they've included. As we know with Autocar, great outlet, but some of their online lists can be a little hit and miss, can't they?
Yes.
So we will kick things off and open it up with Aston Martin, the V8 Vantage. I think one of the most iconic Aston's everywhere. The big, the bulky guy.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that makes sense. 5.3-litre V8, big shouty thing. There's a couple knocking around here at Duke of London every now and again. And yeah, love that thing. Oh, I changed the slide and I got an Audi R8, but it still said V8 Vantage. That was confusing. Audi R8.
Mm.
I don't know if that's the greatest V8 engine ever, but it's a great car.
Well, it is a good engine, mate.
Yeah.
As in, yeah.
The 4.2?
It's not now, but in it's bulletproof, that engine was.
Interesting.
And as well, you know, that was people's first view into a proper everyday supercar. That we can't call it a supercar now, because 5 minutes ago we were talking about an RS3, which is definitely faster than that car.
But of its time. And I drove this car last year, and I said it is still a supercar, because you rock up to anyone's house who's not us, that's still a supercar. The reaction that will give you, the feeling you'll get, everything like that, that's still a supercar. And the RS3 will never give you that.
No, for sure. So definitely for looks, it's definitely still a supercar. And it still looks fairly modern as well when you think about it.
But the performance is now
terrible.
But that happens. That's the time, that's age.
That,
you know,
that V8 engine is loosely married with the V8 RS4 engine.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Which, again, is a bulletproof V8 engine. So
just keeps going.
Yeah.
Okay. We've got to applaud that then. A big old Bentley here that I'm looking at.
Not interested.
Let me just close this because it's not updating at all. And I'm not always going to know what we're looking at. Anyway, moving on. Was there a V8 in the what's that?
The M5
series.
It's an M5.
Yeah, M5 E30. Yeah. What would that be? E39?
E39, yeah.
That is a sought after car at the moment.
Manual car.
Like, that is really starting to go up. Like, manual car, heavily appreciated. Like, I think that's one to watch.
It's so weird as well, because, again, that's another one of them cars that I had probably 12 or 13 years ago, and I could not give the flipping thing away.
Now everyone wants them.
$5,000 or $6,000. I couldn't give it away.
It represents a peak era of BMW.
Yeah, it is a good car though.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a go one, because remember we talked about that blue and tan one recently?
A
friend of mine reached out who's got a green and tan one.
Fair enough.
And he said, if I want to have a go, I want to have a go. So I'm hoping to experience that. I need to learn more about it.
Money pit, that car. I used to do Vanos units. And
really?
Yeah, the Vanos units were
fortune. People are going nuts.
Yeah, the Vanos
are going through the roof.
Yeah.
Moving on, Cadillac CTS-V. Now, I drove a CTS-V and an ATS-V in America during Vlog Angeles years ago. I actually really like them. They're monsters. They're what you want from a big, hunking American V8.
Yeah.
you know, the kind of big shouty 6.2 litre stuff, like just, you know, insane and yeah, what you'd want to see. Chevy Corvette, I guess, yeah, makes sense, you know, again, Americana stuff. We don't know enough about it, so we'll move on. Dodge Challenger. Mm. You've never experienced one of those, have you?
No.
Oh, mate, that thing's a monster.
And they had that, supercharged.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, and they did that. What was the special edition one, which was like 800 horsepower? You had the Hellcat,
yeah.
But you had another one, which was insane. And again, big 6.3.
Hennessy?
Oh, Hennessy did a tune on one, but this is from factory. This was literally just Dodge themselves. This is the thing about V8s, is you can have, like my 360, but then you can also have these big, shouty, gargly monsters.
Yeah.
Great engines. Ferrari 355, I mean, I'll lean towards 360 if I'm honest. But
that's a beautiful sounding engine.
Amazing sounding engine.
355. Don't go nowhere, but...
Looks great and sounds great.
Yeah.
Ford Mustang, I mean, of course.
Yeah.
Jaguar XJR. Now, I actually have always been quite tempted by the, what was the sort of, it was like a final edition or a 10-year edition of an XJR, which came up with the chrome
bits. Really?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're so odd. You just love the...
I loved it. I always wanted it as like a little cruiser and a little executive saloon. It was so nice. Yeah, like, it was called like the final edition or something like that.
Yeah.
It was so nice. So I've always quite been a fond of those. But
Mr. Rust then.
Oh, I can imagine. Jensen Interceptor. Lotus Esprit, list goes on. McLaren P1, of course. I don't know if I mean like pretty impressive, but I wouldn't necessarily. I think that more of the tech that was involved with it. I think the C63, the one that ended up in the Black Series Formula,
the 6.3, the NA car.
I think one of the most iconic V8s of all time.
Yeah, it's a good engine.
It's a great engine.
Great engine. Yeah.
Sound, performance, etc. Morgan Plus 8, woohoo! Porsche with the 928.
Wasn't a good engine.
I can imagine. Not highly so. Range Rover, big old V8 Range Rovers.
That wasn't a
couple
good engine
here.
Either.
Now you're going to start going in as we make our way through this. Toyota Land Cruiser, the big shouty V8 Land Cruiser.
That was a good engine.
It's a monster.
Yeah.
Vauxhall VXR8. Thank you very much.
Good
God, I'm really stumbling. And you know what? I reckon the list could go on.
Mm.
And there's a few in there which I agree with you. I would discount. What do you think about a Rover P5B?
No. No chance.
No chance.
What do you think the best? What do you think the best V8 engine is ever made?
Well, you've caught me off guard there a little bit. Well, I mean, you could say, officially, according to awards, the F8, the 488, it won every award in the world as the best engine ever made, didn't it?
Mm. But yeah, it was only for its time, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. What would you say? You've caught me. So there's too many.
There are a lot.
360, sure.
I think that AMG engine's got to be there. That's you know, that's right up there.
I would totally agree.
That's
totally
6.2 V8 or 6.3, whatever they call it. There's got to be a V8 Ferrari engine in there at some point. I mean, that turbocharged, that 488, that is a fantastic engine.
It's an amazing engine.
I don't know.
I like the variety of a V8. So V10s, right, for me, are just a bit too barky. They're cool, but they're always just a bit like, it's a very Paul Wallace and a Gallardo is a V10. V12, we know, symphonic. Like, and beautiful, and possibly the greatest engine in terms of, I don't know what, mechanics, you know, the fact that you can have a V12 and a Rolls Royce that doesn't move, it's so smooth.
Yeah.
But then you can have it in an 812 Superfast and it sounds like, you know, Pavarotti or something.
They particularly sound well, the V12s, right up in the revs when they're really singing. You know, I think a V8 can sound good low and high.
Yes.
Depending on how it's mapped, though, as well, because obviously they have all these V8s, people go, why have they all got different sounds? And it's how the...
cylinders fire.
Correct.
Of course.
Yeah.
But that's what I love, is that there's so many cars with V8s. I mean, we've gone from an M5 through to a 355 through to a Range Rover. It's a versatile engine. Great soundtrack. Great performance. Usually well reliable. And you can kind of cram it into anything. You know what I mean? Let's put a V8 in an Abarth.
You know what else is a good V8 engine as well?
Go on.
In the M3.
Mmm.
That's a good. It's a bit.
It's a bit sort of cumbersome.
Low down.
Yeah, it's a bit. Bit of a blunt. You've got to rev it. Bruty. Yeah.
But it is a good engine.
Well, fair enough. We know we love a V8, but I thought I'd jump into that Autocar article just after our Valhalla chat. Now, the sort of main meaty topic I wanted to get into today, which I don't know how long we're going to talk about, but off the back of my post on Instagram that I was selling the 911, I saw a lot of comments, once again, going, oh, YouTubers, classic, buying and selling cars, here we go again. And something that I kind of haven't really been part of for a while because I don't tend to buy and sell that many cars. And, you know, the 360 I've had basically 4 years now.
I couldn't believe.
Insane, right?
Four years
in October.
I remember when you picked it up.
4 years in October.
Unbelievable.
Time flies. But yeah, most of the time I keep my cars for a year or just over.
Yeah, yeah.
But as I mentioned, when I picked up the Abarth and the 911, these were the first two times that I bought cars, you know, for YouTube. Rather than cars, you know, as projects, as, you know, 12-month projects. They were always supposed to be 12-month projects. But the 911, unfortunately, its life is ending a little bit sooner than that. So, you know, it was an experiment and I tried it. But it was interesting to see how quickly audience kind of jumped, or some of the audience jumped back into, oh, here he goes, like just going to sell everything, buy and sell everything. And I sort of wanted to address why YouTubers, I guess, buy and sell so many cars, but why any of us do. And fundamentally, all I'll clarify to begin with is, if you are someone who's passionate about cars, right, and you have the opportunity to buy or sell and experience multiple cars at any one point in time, aren't you going to do that?
Yeah.
In the sense that I know you, you're not a YouTuber, but you're in the car industry. I think you change your car every 3 or 4 months.
Yeah,
I think you're worse than most YouTubers, if we're honest. Let's be honest about it.
Which is one good reason why I stopped putting all my personal stuff on YouTube, because I was just fed up with people saying, oh, you're a flipper, you're this, you're this. If someone buys something, and by the way, I have a lot of customers that don't have their car a year. I've literally bought a car this morning. I supplied it to the bloke in December. It's now not even August. He wants to sell it, which is totally fine. If someone buys something, and whether they're selling it for more than they pay for it, or under, or the same, once they buy it, they own it. It's up to them. You know, you always have these people going around about, and it's always on special Ferraris and special Porsches where you're a flipper. But we always know the mechanics and the background behind that. The cars you've had to buy and lose money on to get the special car. By that point, you're probably so pissed off, you just want to try and get some money.
Yeah, I'm probably fuming at that point.
For sure, yeah. So I know I do it as a job, but I don't, it's your money, mate. I don't really see any problem with anyone, not just YouTubers, because you're all in the public eye. It's a problem because you're all supposed to keep your cars and keep them forever until you run them in the ground. I don't really understand it.
Well, the thing is, and I think online, you know, collectors are full foul of this as well. You know, there's a pressure online when you buy a car and you're posting about it that you are supposed to keep it forever, that, you know, that's the sort of expectation. And people do get frustrated when cars leave collection because I think people are invested in it. And I totally get that. And look, this is my business. I'm like, why? So why do YouTubers buy so many cars? Fundamentally, if you're unaware of this, within automotive, but I actually think within any sector, it's a content opportunity. My business is to create content.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm always looking for ideas, narrative stories. Now, there's loads of different ways that can be done, and there's loads of different sectors within YouTube, etc. But whether you are someone who makes videos about household interior or remodeling, or whether you're someone who talks about bricklaying, or whether you're someone like me who films cars, I bought a car, that is a video. And we've seen over the years, in varying sort of levels, that that can be a big video on an automotive YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And there are channels like Shmi, like JWW, like TG, and a lot of the Americans who've made huge successful channels out of continuously buying and selling cars, building a collection because of that interest, that intrigue. Oh, wow, they bought a new car and I want to follow that story and I want to see what it's like to pick it up and et cetera, et cetera. Now, I think as time went on, some YouTube channels, and I definitely will be part of this, you know, we would buy a car, start off that story, start off that experience. Hey, this is my new car and I'm going to film it, I'm going to use it. Not create enough content on that car so that when we came to sell it 6, 9, 12, 18 months later, an audience member would feel that, oh, I don't feel like I really saw much with that car. Like, that's a shame. I was excited and invested and now it's gone. And so they feel a little bit let down. Now, that I understand because I'm an automotive YouTube channel. I've presented my car to you as, look, this is a car I've bought. Let's follow this journey. And then when I sell it, it feels like a bit of a cop-out. It would be like watching Top Gear and them saying, hey, we've got a 812 Competizione in the studio. Can't wait to show you more on it. And then at the end of the series going, yeah, well, actually, we're not going to do anything on the 812 Competizione, so that's that.
Yeah.
I would get it. You'd be like, oh, yeah, that's a bit of a letdown.
Yeah.
However, this is my flip side of it on the other side, is that for me at least, I've only ever bought cars that I wanted to buy, right?
You know,
apart from these last two. And then made content with them, and if people are interested, they're interested. Now, I run the risk there of then no one caring about the cars I have on my channel. And let's face it, the 360 was always a bit of a quirky one in that sense, and I bought other quirky cars. And maybe if I had followed the sort of, you know, traditional format and bought more cars that were more YouTube friendly, could have got more views.
Yeah.
But I've never thought, I mean, it's a lot of money.
So, well, what you haven't done compared to some other YouTubers as well, you've never ever, and I've known you some years now, you've never ever spent beyond your means. As in, you've only ever bought cars that you are comfortable with financially, which is one of the reasons why you bought the 360, right? Because if you probably had all the money in the world, you probably would have bought, well, one, you'd have bought a CS, we know that, or you'd have bought maybe a more modern one. But you've always been very sensible, and I saw firsthand how much you flapped when you bought that brand new McLaren. I thought it was hilarious, but that's because it's a lot of money, mate.
It's a ton of money.
Quite a lot of people online, they'll stretch themselves and buy stuff that they can't necessarily afford, sell the dream, then 2 weeks later it's gone.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, this is a sort of part of it, is that, you know, there's a content opportunity to be made there, right? And I think that's, as an audience member, as someone who watches car channels as well as, you know, creates content for a car channel, I do get excited when someone buys a new car. I want to follow that story. I want to be invested in that sort of series. So, you know, when that car gets sold prematurely or that story doesn't come to fruition, I can understand. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's a shame. I would have liked to have followed that. But I think there's definitely sometimes a sort of, as you say, an accusation, whether it's as a online content creator or car collector or whatever it might be, of, oh, bloody hell, you no one can stick to anything. Like, that's what I sort of saw as a frustration. It's like, oh, here he is. You know, no one can stick to a project. And, you know, car YouTubers are all the same. They buy stuff just to get the views of I bought, and then they sell it once that, you know, that sort of wave has gone down.
But I think that's the problem now. I don't think you are getting the views that you used to. I think a lot of people see through it. And I'm not talking about you or a couple of the others, but I think people have seen through it now, and they're just, it's too like, oh, not again, not, you know, it's too mundane, you know, and people are just fed up with seeing new car, new car, new car, new car.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think that's exactly it. I think we've got to a point now where that storyline maybe doesn't work. Having said that, though, if you look at some channels when new cars are bought, it is still a peak. It's still a spike. It's not what it used to be.
Tim runs his business that way.
Well, as Shmi said, we spoke to him in great length about it. I think, you know, back in the day, people would buy a car, right? And that car would probably be on their channel for a year. Mm. And that meant a whole load of content.
Yeah.
Where now people are buying three or four cars per year and chopping and changing and swapping. And so the storylines are a little bit more convoluted, and therefore the spike isn't so high, because I think the audience have, as you say, wisened up a bit, care slightly less, but also that storyline's not the same.
Yeah.
You know, you're not investing in one car that you're then going to follow this adventure with, because it's usually a car that's being added to another collection. So you're like, okay, cool, there's another one. Like, great. Like, you know, what does it mean?
Yeah. And the other big reason, mate, and the biggest reason, will be money. As in, when all you boys come on the scene, I'm not talking about Tim or Paul so much because they were a bit longer, but when all the rest of you come on the scene, you was all getting in and out of cars for free. As in, what I mean is, because the market, there was a bubble, wasn't there? There was a couple of year bubble where everyone was sort of buying normal series production supercars and not doing their brains.
Except me.
Yeah, because you was buying stuff
stupid stuff.
Not just that, you were buying within your means. And as well, there's another thing as well. There's quite a few of you that actually use them. Like, you can say what you like about Shmi, but he uses his cars, mate.
Every single
one of them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, and you're the same, and a couple of others.
Well, except that 911.
Yeah, but that's why you're selling it.
Yeah, there you go.
But in general, your history tells the internet that you buy cars because, one, you want them, and two, you're going to use them. And you're not the only one that's doing that. But nowadays, what's happening now is that they have to come in and out of these cars. One, because I don't know if half of them can actually afford to buy them. They're just doing it for views, which doesn't make any sense because there's no money in YouTube. You've spoke about this before. And two, I think they feel they've got an image to uphold. And it's like a double-edged sword. They're prepared to put themselves into huge debt for very little reward.
Yeah, and I think it's chasing an old formula, right?
You
know, which is, you know, easy to fall into that rut of
things have moved on.
Yeah. Oh, you know, things have, I haven't got much content to make at the minute. Things are a bit slow. How do I reinvigorate my channel? Oh, I'm going to go and buy something. Mm. That will create a spike. And the problem is, it does still work in the short term.
Yes.
You can get that sort of one video, maybe two videos sort of spike, and then you're like, okay, great, that worked. But then you very quickly fall back into that rut. I think if I'm really honest with myself, because I feel like I'm coming across as sounding a little bit defensive at the moment, where probably seeing those comments of people being like, oh, I can't believe you're already getting rid of the 911. Oh, classic. Like, oh, it probably touched a nerve, because I think there was a part of me which felt disappointed in myself, or felt like I was letting myself and the channel down, that I had bought this car, I'd built it up and then not really done much with it.
Yeah.
And I probably did feel like some of the channels that I don't appreciate so much that do that they literally buy a car and it's gone in three videos time. And that's the thing for me. That's probably why I'm now coming across, oh, I want to talk about this, because it probably did touch the nerve, and I have to be honest about that. But at the same time, life is life, and there's money in that car, and it's my money and my business. So I have to allow myself to make those decisions like I always have. That's how I always run the channel. Mm. You know, I've always just bought and sold cars when I've wanted to, how I've wanted to, etc. And I think because I did it differently with the 911 and the Abarth, and then I saw a few comments that triggered me slightly to be like, oh, you're the same as everyone else. Like, well, firstly, I don't think we all are anymore. Mm. There are some channels that still buy and sell cars a lot.
Mm.
And we all know who they are. And Tim is one of them. And he's made a huge success out of it. But then
it's how he runs his business, though, mate. And he's already spoken to us here and off camera of how he offsets it and how he actually does it. I'm not going to go into any great detail because it's not for me to say. Tim will...
That is our business, you know.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. But I think it's more so that if I take myself out of the picture for a second and analyze it, you know, if I saw a channel buy a Challenge Stradale, and then after 6 months sell that Challenge Stradale, I'd be like, "What are you doing? What are you thinking about?"
Mm.
Now, they're totally within their own rights to do whatever they want.
Of course they are.
It's them, it's their business, it's their channel, exactly. It's their money. It's their life. They can do it. But so I do get that frustration, I think. And it's also when it's, you know, it's that kind of thing of like, I don't know what it is. And I don't know why I'm frustrated about it. I'm trying to sort of almost psychoanalyze myself as I'm making these points. But there's definitely something within me that frustrated me that I saw people immediately going to the, oh, classic YouTuber, buying and selling cars. And I think it's more so that we're 5 years down the line, and I say I thought people had wisened up to the fact that is just part of how the YouTube game works. Mm. We're not all the same. You know, sometimes there's different reasons for different things. Some projects work, some projects don't work. Every channel's slightly different.
Correct.
I think I just felt a bit persecuted. Maybe I'm being a bit too defensive. I don't know.
No, I don't think you are. And I think sometimes not this audience, by the way, but I just think in general, YouTube audience can be a bit harsh on all different creators, not just automotive, just in general. Don't forget, guys, what you lot do is completely free to watch. You have to create a story, and however you feel as a person, you need to do that. Whether that means you go out and buy loads of cars and then you sell them in weeks and then you start, you know, repeat. If you think that that's a business model and you think that's how you're going to achieve your goals, no problem. You know, because there's such a thing in a YouTube video called an advert, which is how you're all paid. So, you know, you have to, it's kind of like you're all on the wheel. You know what I mean? You have to keep creating and feeding that monster. You all just have different ways of doing it. And that's basically what it boils down to.
Yeah, and we're not always going to get it right. I'm sorry. you know, we're not always going to get it right. And you know, I think that's what it is. We're just figuring it out as we go. But, you know, it was interesting to see, and this is always a few when it comes to these comment sections, you know, the majority of any of my audience are always incredible, and it's never malicious, but as many sort of...
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Things that were like, oh, you know, classic, you know, selling the car, you know, such an auto YouTuber. They were also like, can't wait to see what you get next. Like, I definitely didn't say I was getting anything next. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's not an immediate assumption. If you sell something, you're going to buy something else. Like, you know.
But in your world, it is.
That's the thing, right? Problem. So this is the thing, you know, why do YouTubers still buy and sell cars? It's business. Unfortunately, that is it. That is the business of car YouTubing. I would agree. And I long for cars that I can love and own for a long time, like the 360. I don't want to constantly buy and sell cars. We've spoken a lot about my desire to have another F-Type because I've worked out that's really the only car that makes me super happy. And I want a car that I can keep forever as well. I don't want to keep changing. Same time, I do want to buy lots of things, like that PDK GT4. Like, oh, I'd like one of these. You know, if I won the Euro Millions, I'd be buying everything. But
yeah, of course.
Is that
real?
Yeah, but I think also half the fun of it is experiencing all these different things.
So that's a really big point. Experience. I've got lots of customers and friends that's what they'll do.
Just want to experience different stuff.
Jump in and out of cars. And some of my best pals that I go away with, like, you can't call them flippers, but then if they were online, they'd be called flippers because they buy a car, they take it on a trip, they come back, they sell it, they get another one. But that's just because they want to experience all the cars. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's their money. It's your money. It's my money. It's your money. It's everyone's money. It's your life. You can do whatever you like with it. Unfortunately, you play to an audience, mate, and you're judged on that.
I think there's plenty of people doing this.
Yeah.
You know, not just auto YouTubers. But yeah, I think we've addressed that point, which, as I say, it's, you know, it's life. It's people in the car world. It's content. It's a narrative story. As long as people are watching, or there's a potential to watch, there's content to be made there. So I don't always support it. I don't like buying and selling things lots of quickly or basically resorting to the I bought her just for cheap views. But clearly it touched some nerve.
And people can vote with their feet.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sound derogatory because this isn't my world. If you don't like it, don't watch it.
Agreed.
It's as simple as that. You're not paying for it. It's completely free. And that don't just go for you. That goes for YouTube in general, all the automotive industry.
And life. If Taylor Swift comes on the radio, I change the station.
No,
sorry, Taylor.
No one's got a gun to your head. You haven't got to watch him or watch anyone. That's it.
Well, we'll end it there. So anyway, that's this week's episode finished. We'll be back next week with our second Behind the Glass live episode. See, that'll be super exciting.
Can't wait for that.
He's ready.
I'm going in.
He's going in on everyone. If you want to follow Tony, he's at Tony Grewalwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. I'm at Seen Through Glass on most social media platforms. I can never say that. If you want to keep watching us, hit subscribe, turn on notifications. And if you're listening to us, well, keep following us on whatever platform you're listening to us on. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.